This episode of Current Geek is brought to you by your friends at Hostpapa. Hostpapa's powerful web hosting solutions, cloud-based productivity tools, and more are perfect for small business owners, digital entrepreneurs, and freelancers. Go to hostpapa.com/currentgeek today and use our exclusive promo code CURRENTGEEK to save 15% on their popular shared web hosting packages. That's hostpapa.com/currentgeek.
I have it.
Current Geek!
Welcome back to Current Geek. This is the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, Geeks of the World, and you to keep things current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson with Tom Merritt. Hi, Tom.
I declare these proceedings open, Scott.
Oh, it's
swinging the two greatest political circuses the world has ever known.
You know, that's good timing for you, because here we are at the ass end of the Republican deal and on the face end of the Democratic one. So
I was gonna say the elephant is a Republican. Oh. The ass is...
I know what you're talking about.
Our continuing not covering political conventions continues on Current Geek. Don't
yeah,
worry,
it does.
And I think that's a shame.
Yeah, you think so? You think there ought to be more?
I've heard the best dystopian fiction of my life this week.
Yeah, we don't, you know, it's funny because we don't normally on this show get to, we don't talk about politics on the show really because it just never comes up. It's not nerdy enough for our taste, but I'm going to go with you that, like, there's some real good source material that happened this week. If you're writing post-apocalyptic fiction or genre fiction of any type, I recommend you check that out.
Yeah. Like I said, I don't think Trump's going for the presidency. I think he's going for Hugo.
Nice. Hey, that voice.
You don't have to pick one, right?
No. That voice you hear is that of Emmett Platt. He's a writer, composer, producer. He's worked on over 20 Star Trek audiobooks, other tons of work all over the place. Emmett, thanks for being on, man.
Oh, I appreciate it. It's awesome. It's good to be here.
Thank you so much.
Like-minded dorks.
Yeah, like-minded dorks. Oh, that's a better name for the show, Tom. What were we thinking?
We're changing the name. It's episode 100. We're changing the name.
No.
Like-minded dorks. Wait till 101. You can iterate after the number.
Yeah.
All right, fine. Current Geek, colon, like-minded dorks. Speaking of like-minded dorks, we have a regular here with us today. It's Daryl Skeels. He's been here before. Daryl is a podcaster and a good friend of the networking program. Daryl, hello.
Yay, hello.
Hello.
Great to be back.
And a Star Trek nerd in your own right, which is great because today you both have a little trivia to do for us that is very Star Trek related. I hope you're excited.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
All right.
I would submit Daryl has a mind like no other.
Would you say that?
Oh, I'd say that. I don't know if that's good or not.
All right, I agree.
I'd say that.
I agree.
His mother had him tested.
Well, good. Well, I'm so glad everyone's here. I'm glad we can do this together. I'm going to start it with the headlines.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom, take it away.
So I don't know if you guys know about this thing. It's a little get-together in San Diego for comic lovers. Called Comic Con. It's short for conference. Turns out a lot of people showing off trailers for movies down there. Nothing to do with comics, although some of the movies are based on comics. No, I'm just kidding. San Diego Comic Con full swing. We got a sneak peek at season 2 of Man in the High Castle. Netflix announced Daredevil will definitely get a third season. They also showed off a teaser for The Defenders, which will bring the Devil of Hell's Kitchen together with Luke Cage, Iron Fist, and Jessica Jones, coming in 2017. Also a trailer for Luke Cage's own series coming on September 30th, a teaser for the Iron Fist series, and non-Netflix trailers abound as well, with Snowden starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And also with a cameo by Edward Snowden, interestingly enough, coming September 16th. And finally, Adam Nimoy directed a documentary about his father, Leonard, called For the Love of Spock, coming September 9th.
So I'm excited about everything you mentioned and all of them. Some of them we knew about, some of them we hadn't heard much about. And man, is Joseph Gordon-Levitt channeling freaking Snowden in this. It's kind of creepy and weird. But all of these, some of the stuff is really new. But what I'm most excited about here is this Adam Nimoy directed documentary. I feel like we heard about this a while ago, Daryl, and now it's fruition. It's time. We get to see what that thing's about. Is it going to shed any new light in Star Trek in that world? Or are we just going to, is it just going to be a loving portrait to someone's dad?
I think it's going to be a loving portrait to Leonard Nimoy, not Leonard Nimoy's dad, to Leonard Nimoy's son.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Might shed some light on things we don't know.
But we're not going to get any dirt like, him and Kirk used to fight, or Chekhov.
No, because we already know that's true.
I guess that's true. Actually, those two are said to have gotten along pretty well.
I think they're good friends, but like all good friends, I think they used to fight.
Yeah, they probably did. Emmett,
I don't think they fought like they were on the planet, you know, like the guy in the lizard suit, anything like that.
Emmett, do you think, I don't know, what do you think about that thing? I'm really curious about, you know, Star Trek people, whether they look forward to these kinds of things that are not really Star Trek, the show, but about those involved. Do you know what I'm trying to say? Like, how do you feel about something that's just all Nimoy all the time?
Well, I mean, the one thing you'll find about folks that work on Star Trek, at least that are my age, we all started out as Trekkies, you know? Mm-hmm. So there's a certain point where you're like, oh, that's another Star Trek thing. Do I care? Yes, of course I care. I love Star Trek, you know? So I think I saw the trailer and I just know the movie's going to make me cry.
Yeah.
I'm just going to lose it. Like, you know, as far as exposing any particular grumbles about a cast from a show that happened 50 years ago, I don't think that's really the point of that movie at all. I think that if Adam were trying to sell a book, that might be the book, but I don't think that's what this movie is at all.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Did you see the trailer, Scott?
Oh, yeah, I did.
It's going to be heartwarming.
Yeah, and he's right about the tear jerkiness of it. In fact, the trailer
heartwarming
itself.
Heartwarming and tear jerking, yeah. Both at the same time.
Jerking your tears, yeah. Warming your heart.
I didn't get a call from Adam
you
to be in that movie because they didn't want 5 minutes of the film devoted to me yelling about his father eating chocolate before he got on a mic. So
hold on. I want to hear, we can't just leave that there.
No joke. Like I almost ate chocolate before I came down here to the show. I'm like, that sounds like a really bad idea.
Turns out
professionals will agree with
yeah,
that.
Yeah. And so
stay away from milk, stay away from chocolate. You know, just water. Water's fine.
That's a good idea. So you actually
get up between takes and bounce a little bit. But,
right.
You know, Leonard liked chocolate.
So when you produced or helped produce these Star Trek audio bits, and I mean, these, you had actual cast members from the old show in studio doing reads.
Yeah. It's just a case where, I mean, I think someone's actually written about it before where an engineer actually had to develop a chocolate filter. That Leonard had to work through.
Wow, because must have really liked that stuff.
Wait, the filter was made of chocolate? He just eat it.
Yes. What you don't know is like Ponfar is every 7 years. You've just got to devour Mykonites or something. But both John DeLancey and Leonard Nimoy on Spock versus Q and Spock versus Q2, the sequel. Mm. But yeah, I think the movie's going to be really, really sweet. And I think it's going to expose more Leonard to Spock fans. And I think it'll do it in a very interesting way because Leonard's story is much bigger than Star Trek. In the same way that George Takei's story is a billion times bigger than Star Trek. Like, and the other thing is too, like you talk about, you know, George's time in an internment camp when he was a kid, how many people would hear that story if we didn't watch Star Trek, if he wasn't brought to the culture in a story like that. We wouldn't know at all. So I think we're going to see a little bit more about, you know, Leonard Nimoy growing up in Boston, trying to become an actor.
I'm excited about
a very long time.
Do you think
when Leonard got to Hollywood, he couldn't get hired at all.
Do you think he'll end up doing, or they'll have some sort of segment of this documentary that delves into his time in the, I guess it had been the 70s, where he was trying to branch out into things like In Search Of, and there were more movie roles coming his way, and none of that seemed to really hit in a major way. I mean, I loved In Search Of, but it was never Star Trek level stardom. And then kind of swinging back around to Star Trek in a way, you know, in the later years seems like a really great story to tell. Like, what's that like
I think one of the things that a lot of people don't understand is like they'll take a look at the big picture of an actor's career and they'll be like, oh, well, here's your T.J. Hooker era, right?
Yeah.
But what they don't understand is that these actors are all in a union. It's called SAG. And what they don't understand is that 99% of everyone in SAG is currently unemployed at any given time.
Wow.
So whether something like hits and makes a big mark is a lot less important than can I pay my mortgage? Mm. So like, I think actors think about working and they think about not working, not necessarily I'm working, but it's not huge. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that does make sense. It's not just I'm either wildly successful and living like George Clooney or I'm on the street. Forget it. Like,
right.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Well, I'm very excited about
remember,
it.
Remember, a lot of time after Star Trek, Shatner was homeless.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, living in a camper van.
Oh, that's kind of cool in a weird way, though. It's kind of cool, right? Leonard Nimoy rocking around in a camper van. It's kind of cool.
No, Shatner was in the camper van.
Oh, that was Shatner?
Yeah.
All right, not as cool. Canadian.
Wait, no way. How is that suddenly not as cool?
Because it's Canadian in a camper, and that sounds funny. That's why.
They have holes in their campers?
Yeah. I need to find some kerosene for my stove.
Yeah. Eh? Anyway.
My effluent is not coming out.
So oh, you're going to need to move this abandoned camper.
Exactly.
Oh, Captain Kirk.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Well, that was, yeah, when he was down and out a little bit there, were people, like, how was he treated? I wonder. I don't know. See, that's fascinating to me. That whole period where they wanted to shed the cast
typecasting.
They wanted to get rid of that, and they were all kind of in a mood to do that for the most part, and they couldn't shake it, or at least it seems from this point of view that they couldn't shake it, and it kind of happened to TNG as well, except Patrick Stewart shook it, and nobody else seemed to be able to quite shake it, and hey, that's so interesting to me.
No. You need to understand that Frosted Frakes has been doing a lot of really good directing. If you've ever watched Leverage, he's directed a ton of it.
Oh, he's good.
So he's just done a lot less acting and a lot more directing. It's fantastic.
Yeah, he's
but
great.
As far as Shatner and the camper van story is, when man walked on the moon, he was in a camper van. You know, he was in a camper, and like a kid came up to him and said, you know, just because the moon was all over the news, he's like, is Spock on the moon? And he's like, oh God. So he's just talking to this kid. It was just him and his dog living in this camper. And this kid said, is Spock on the moon? And he's like, yes, he's on a, you know, special mission. And he shows the kid the camper, and he like shows him the stove. He's like, and here's my warp engine. And he like makes all this stuff up off the top of his head just to entertain this kid that saw him walking his dog.
That's kind of awesome.
Yeah.
I want a movie about that. Let's get Chris Pine. Chris Pine can play the role.
The reboot.
Yep. I'm into that. That sounds awesome to me.
The anyway. Previous campground gets destroyed, and he has to go to a different campground. Yeah. And all of a sudden, everything happens differently.
You know, yes. You love that. Every time the campground gets blown up. Every time.
J.J. Abrams has it as, you know, Gene Roddenberry is reimagined as a robot that speaks French.
Jean Roddenberry.
Roddenberry. There you go.
The Japanese newspaper Nikkei reports that the last known manufacturer of VCRs, Fune Electric, will cease production at the end of the month. Fune has made VCRs since 1983. At their peak, they sold 15 million units per year, but they cite declining sales and difficulty sourcing parts as reason for the decision to end production. They did report 750,000 units were sold worldwide last year.
That's not bad. Like, I thought you were going to say, like, oh, they sold
declining,
five.
Declining, yeah. So they're like, we can't get parts. The sales get worse every year. It's time to get out. But that's way more than I would have thought, right?
Yeah. This is, I mean, it's less than 1/15 of their used to be peak sales, but still 750,000 units of anything is no, I'm surprised by this. Like, somebody somewhere is buying these. Who's buying VHS VCRs and stuff? I don't know.
People that still have tapes, man. I've got Doctor Who VHS tapes and nothing to play them on. So
that's true, I guess. But so why couldn't they keep it around the way record players are doing now? It's more of a weird, nostalgia play. And
VCRs are crazy, crazy more complex than a turntable. Like they're a lot of moving like, parts. Yeah,
they're more like 8-tracks than records too.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of moving parts. There's heads. It's a train wreck.
Yeah, I remember in the late or mid-90s going, good riddance, don't want to see that ever again. DVD, baby, right. Let's go. And then now I'm that way with DVDs, and I'm like, just stream it, don't care. Get these these discs away from me. But 750,000 people were like, no, we still got old copies of, you know, Little Mermaid we need to play or whatever. So
that's the other thing, too. Like, Disney has not always put their stuff on DVD until they're damn good and ready.
Yeah, that whole vault thing. Daryl, I know you love the vault. We've talked about this before when Disney will pack stuff into the vault. I think that was you I talked to about that. How do you feel about the idea that if you've got a bunch of, you've got kids, you got a bunch of old VHSs laying around, what are you going to do if you don't have a VCR to play them on?
Well, I was going to buy one from Funai Electric, but I guess I'm not now.
Yeah.
You lost a customer, Funai.
I actually have never heard. So, okay, so we got our first VCR in 1983, this exact year. And we got it early, and nobody else did because my parents went to Japan for a business thing and came back with one, and we'd never seen it before. And that was amazing, we thought, at the time. And I think the last time I ever played a tape was probably 1998. So hearing this is bringing me a weird mix of nostalgia and good riddance. Does that seem normal? It seems a little weird to feel that way. I'm not used to feeling that way, Tom.
Yeah, I was just trying to see if I could figure out which brands Fune manufactured. So people might say, oh, well, if you got a Philips or Magnavox branded VCR, looks like that probably was made by Fune.
Oh, right. Yeah, because they're probably, because I've never even heard of that name outside. I mean, they're probably, it's like wholesale and other people are putting their brands on it or whatever. Yep.
Also, 750,000, based on a rough population of the Earth of 7.125 billion, is like less than 0.01%.
Yeah, it's tiny.
It's a really tiny, tiny amount.
But if any one of the three, or four of us rather, sold 750,000 of something, we'd be thrilled. You know? That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Just anyone, like your book.
Not even kidding.
Or one of my prints on the store. Or Daryl, if you made a bunch of phasers. You know? Whatever, man. Like that, I'd take those sales. That'd be sweet. But good luck. Yeah. Or farewell, VCRs. May you never haunt us again.
Pour a little out from my current Geek Shock glass.
I will adjust the tracking no more forever.
Put it on slow speed. It says here, Tom, last known manufacturer. Does that mean there might be some mystery maker out there or hacker in his garage?
What that means is that The Verge and places don't know of anybody else making it because it's the internet, it's unless you're sure, you should never say it is the last. There are no more. It's possible there's some small company out there in India or somewhere in China. Making them in small amounts that just nobody's aware of.
Yep. Well, all right then. There you go. Yep. Farewell.
Hey, we got to talk about something a little sad here. We've got a brand new Star Trek coming out today, which I'm going to go see as soon as I get done watching doing the show. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to do this. And they have already announced that there will be a fourth Star Trek in this same universe, made and produced by the J.J. Abrams team. J.J. Abrams will be producing. I don't think he'll be directing, but still too early to say any of that stuff anyway. The one thing they are talking about is Anton Yelchin's character Chekhov will not be recast. That was after his unfortunate passing. That was one of the questions that people had. Abrams told Movie Phone and a few other outlets that filmmakers are currently considering several options. They might kill off the character. They might come up with some other reason for him to be gone. And Star Trek Beyond will be dedicated to Yelchin's memory. But they're not going to give us a new Chekhov in the next movie.
Wow. I don't know what I thought they were going to do. Daryl, did you have a theory as to how they were going to handle this? And is this what it was?
Yeah, that's the first thing I heard, was that they were just going to pretend like he's not there, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't hear of any plans to write him out.
Yeah. Go ahead.
But I knew he wasn't going to be replaced.
Yeah.
The one thing you got to notice here is we had an entire first season of Star Trek that had no Chekhov on it at all.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which was funny because you had Kirk, holding him up saying, "I never forget a face." It's like he wasn't on the ship then, man. But Khan remembers Chekhov, though they couldn't have possibly have ever met.
That's right.
The way I look at that is he was the pin setter guy down in the bowling alley.
Yeah, so right.
Hey, he was on the
bowling
ship
one time, and
we didn't see every minute that happened on the ship. Right?
Yeah,
right.
That's true.
That's true.
And when Khan went bowling, obviously.
Well, one thing I'd like to say about this, if I could take a brief diversion.
Sure.
You've got a lot of people who think that the new Star Trek movies aren't making any money, and they choose to justify this by use of, Hollywood accounting. Let me make this very clear. If they weren't making money, they wouldn't keep making them.
Oh, yeah.
2009 made money. Into Darkness made even more money than that. And Beyond is on track to make even more than Into Darkness.
I have a question. Who's saying they don't make any money? Because that's ridiculous. Like, yeah. I haven't seen anything credible that's ever said that.
I know people who are well-known directors who've made this absolutely redonkulous claim. And I just don't get it at all.
Yeah.
If you don't like the movies, you don't like them. That's fine, but don't make stuff up.
Yeah. That's it's weird. You know what? It also occurred to me, the director of this is the director of the Fast and Furious last few movies. Not Jason Lin. Justin Lin. I always say Jason. This must be a little strange for him. This is the second movie in a row, his last being Furious 7, where one of his principal actors passed away during production. And in both cases, from kind of bad, you could say, freak accidents. And to have to, I mean, I guess all the filming had been done on this and even some reshoot stuff, whereas with Fast 7, they hadn't done all their Paul Walker stuff yet, so they had to do a lot of digital things and some stuff with his brother. But that must be really strange to go from movie to movie as a director where this happens to you. I mean, it must feel, you know how human beings are. We have a coincidence and we feel like there's something going on. And I just imagine that's just real sad for him. Like, why would it feel good to do two movies in a row where this happens? It must have been a real bummer.
But realistically, I mean, you have what's called a completion bond when you're going to make a movie. Mm-hmm. And your completion bond is basically an insurance deal that makes sure that you're going to be able to finish your movie with your cast. And if you can't, they pay out.
Yeah.
So directors are very, very used to the idea of an actor's mortality being a very important line item. Like, if you don't pass a drug test, you can't get a completion bond. You can't direct a movie. You can't star in a movie. So the idea of actor mortality is actually pretty common. The other thing that they think a lot about is, oh my God, what if someone dies on set? Because that has also happened.
Yeah.
So it's a scary world, and I would never want to be a director, but the mortality of their cast is always very clearly made to them, even when everybody survives.
Yeah.
So
look at Harry Potter. You know, you cast an elderly person as Dumbledore, a fantastic actor. But that is a big risk, and it happened, and they had to recast. Mm-hmm. Daryl, I'm curious what you think about the decision to not recast. Do you think that's right, or do you think that unfortunately now we've removed something from Star Trek?
Oh, I think it's the right thing to do because he was a great actor and he really made that role his own. I don't think it would be right to replace him.
It'd be hard to too, right? Like you could try that and say it's the same character, but it would just, I don't know, something would be lost there. And you've already established this new series this new film series as a reboot. You've said, look, this is us going back in time, twisting some stuff around, and now we've got our cast that we love, but now they're young and off in their own direction in this version of the universe. And some love that and some don't love that. But regardless of where you stand on it, they've established this idea that that's the case. And to try to recast him seems even counter to that. Like, in a way, it serves him, his character and his work best to either have the character pass away on the show or some other reason why he's not there.
You get two for one with this.
Yeah, you kind of do. I don't want it to sound creepy, but he's right. It's two for one, basically.
Your cast isn't going to want to work with the new guy. That's just not going to happen. These guys are very, very close on the new Star Trek movies. Mm-hmm. Second, you get to, Anton Yelchin was actually talented and actually a good guy, and no one has a bad thing to say about him, but they didn't before he died anyway. Mm-hmm. The third thing you went on is there's not something in Chekhov's character that you have to link back to in a Star Trek movie. Like, if it's Sulu, yeah, he's going to be swinging a sword at some point. If it's Uhura, she's going to sing at some point. If it's Chekhov, there's not something that you're leaving on the table.
He's going to mysteriously say a word that begins with V with a W sound, even though the Russian alphabet has a V.
Sure.
Right. You're not going to lose anything story-wise for simply letting that fall.
Yeah, and he got to do what Tom's talking about. He got to do that in the first two movies, in the first movie primarily. And here's the only other thing I would say about these Star Trek movies, and I'm excited about seeing it tomorrow. I'm excited about a fourth one being made. I think these are great and totally jazzed that Star Trek exists on any plane, anytime. But it occurs to me that when I was a kid and I saw a motion picture and then eventually saw the one with the whales for Voyage Home, about that same amount of time has passed since the 2009 reboot, and now when we'll get to our fourth movie in a year or two. That's weird to me. Like, how compressed that time feels as opposed to when I was a kid and I was chomping at the bit for a new Star Trek movie all the time. And it felt like they weren't making them but every 10 years, which is clearly not the case. But yeah, I just wanted to remind everybody, we are at Voyage Home stage in this new cruise attempt to make movies. Yeah. It's crazy.
Now, under the laws of the internet, we are required to give equal time to Star Wars at this point in the show. Grand Admiral Thrawn, the main villain in the popular Star Wars Heir to the Empire novel trilogy, which is now legend, not canon, will figure in the Star Wars Rebels next season, making him canon again. And in fact, Timothy Zahn has been asked and will write a novel called Thrawn coming in April 2017.
That's awesome. I'm glad if they're going to cherry pick what they're going to keep out of this world or the extended fiction that then got canceled or removed or, as you said, said got put into legendary status, then Thrawn is the one guy you want to reach back and pull in here. But do you think we'll ever get it outside of novels and the series? Or will movies ever have the great dream that readers have had since the early 90s, that Grand Admiral Thrawn would show up in their movies? Does anyone think that's ever going to happen now?
Are we allowed to use profanity?
You can, yes. Even if it's a gnarly one, I can bleep it. So yes, go ahead.
I am f***ing pumped for Thrawn. And honestly, I think that's a bold move because it's not the move I would have made. I think if you're going to go back into the EU, you pull in Talon Card. Bring in Talon Card. But I saw the images of Thrawn and Thrawn speaking in the Rebels trailer, and I was like, I think the squee noise I made would have been dangerous if anybody was in close proximity.
That's awesome.
I'm pumped.
He's great. There's nothing wrong with a little Thrawn in your life. Daryl, you read those books? Do you have any kind of fandom for him?
I don't, but it rhymes with prawn, so I'm all for it.
You're a simple
big
man.
Big fan of seafood, yeah. Daryl is.
Simple so. Man, simple tastes. It's all fine with us.
I think we will see Star Wars Rebels crossover into the what were once called the anthology films. They're Star Wars stories now. I don't think we see those characters like Ahsoka Tano or Ezra Dax. I don't think we see them, and therefore I don't think we see Thrawn crossover into the mainline series, mostly because they're far enough into the future now that it would be a bit of a stretch.
Well, it's good.
Unless Thrawn turns out to be Snoke, but I don't think that's
yeah, probably not, right? That seems crazy.
Well, Thrawn wasn't a Force user either. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a tactician. That's what I'm hoping.
We can't. Snoke may not be either. That may be why he needs Kylo Ren.
Yeah. But
supposedly Snoke's like thousands of years old. I don't think Thrawn is that old.
Yeah, or 800 years old or whatever it was. But I want him to be like the brilliant tactician and war smart guy that he was in the books. And that made him unique as a villainous type of character in that it wasn't so much that he was, you know, prancing around in dark robes with big red sabers and monologuing all the time, although there's a bit of that. He was like this cold, even-keeled, very structured, focused dude.
And he's got no time for anything that isn't straight-up evidence.
Yeah.
And he's got – and he's so powerful as that tactician. He's just the best. You can't do anything about him. In the end, I don't want to spoil Heir to the Empire for people. Throw himself up.
Yeah.
Like – everything lines up in such a way that Thrawn gets royally f***ed. I wish I could say that it was the rebellion that took him down, and that is not how it happens.
Mm. Well, interesting that you mentioned spoilers, because that's our final story of the top stories here. Mashable's Alan Jim collected several studies of what effects spoilers have on enjoyment. A lot of people are going to not like what these studies say. A study by psychologists Jonathan Levitt and Nicholas Christenfeld found on average that students found spoiled stories more enjoyable, even when there were mysteries or stories with twists. A study by Judith Rosenbaum and Benjamin Johnson found that people high in the need for affect, the kind of people who seek out emotional activities, tended to enjoy unspoiled stories a little more than people with the need for cognition, people who like puzzles and that sort of thing, which may explain why we have such a debate over spoilers going on.
Yeah, I mean, this is purely empirical evidence. I am not, you know, a good sample study, but I have often found that when I hear about what's happening in a movie or a TV show before I go, I think I don't want to hear it. But when I do hear it and then I go, I enjoy it more because I find myself looking for clues and watching more carefully. And how do they get to the thing I know is going to happen or whatever? Like, I feel like I'm I've lived this and that it's true, but I still don't want it. Like, I was hearing the other day, there's a game I'm playing right now that I really want to, you know, play for myself and see this rad ending for myself that everyone keeps talking about how great it is. And a podcast started talking about it. I said, all right, we're going to spoil this. And I had to turn it off. And I turned it off because I don't think I want to be spoiled. But the truth is, every time I have been, it's been fine. It's not that big a deal. So I'd love to know what our guests think. Where are your heads at on spoils?
Learning the destination, I think, is fine because you still have to do the journey. And the journey is the fun part of it, I think.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, I think, I don't know how much they spent on that spoiler study, but they just could have called me. I would have just said, all right, guy in lab coat with clipboard, what's your favorite movie? And he'd be like, Empire Strikes Back. And I'd say, okay, how many times have you seen it? And he'd say, oh man, probably at least 300. And I'd say, okay, so spoilers don't matter to you. You know damn well what happens in that movie and you're going to watch it anyway.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
No, it is. I mean, that's not how science works. Anybody could say stuff like that. And what's cool about these studies is they said, well, let's find out why that happens. Mm. Let's actually give people stories. Let's spoil them. Let's have them rate their own enjoyment. And let's see if that's true for all people, or maybe only some people like it. Maybe people actually don't like rewatching as much as they liked it the first time. And so they found out, like, no, on average, people, there's something called fluidity. Where, and that's what Scott was referencing earlier, is when you know what's going to happen, you can pay more attention to the other parts of the story and enjoy them. But Emmett, you're not wrong. I mean, we all kind of knew. The fact that we watch things more than once means that a spoiler doesn't entirely ruin it. Sure. On the other hand, I think this idea that people who are looking for an emotional jolt are the ones who are like, no, don't spoil that emotional jolt that I'll get when I'm surprised, because I live for that.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think that, I mean, for me, my favorite kind of spoilers to give are the ones that get people completely charged up for reasons they can't even comprehend. If somebody had told me before I saw Star Trek VI that 20 minutes into this movie, Jim Kirk was going to surrender himself and the Enterprise to the Klingon Empire, it would have blown my mind. Guess what? That's exactly what happens in Star Trek VI.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, and it doesn't, like Daryl said, it doesn't tell you the journey. It also doesn't tell you why he does it, what leads to that decision. Yep. So, I mean, I get it that, like, sure, Sixth Sense, you know, let's use Made of People. Like, knowing it's made of people, when that was brand new, Soylent Green was a twist, and a lot of people live for that jolt of like, oh my gosh, I didn't figure that out, right? Yeah. Some people figure it out ahead of time, and now it's just become such a thing that we just say it. You can still watch Soylent Green and enjoy that movie.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So I think it's fine to let's not spoil important plot twists and surprises for people who don't want to be spoiled because they want those jolts. But we don't need to be super police about, don't tell me any single thing. Mm-hmm. Or don't, you know, it's fine if somebody doesn't want to know any single thing, but don't make it so that the rest of us can't discuss it because you're like, might possibly let a clue drop for somebody.
Yeah. Is it any different for you in books than it is saying, you know, visual stuff like TV or movies? Or is it the same?
I'm one of the people, like, I prefer not to be spoiled on surprises because I do like that jolt.
Yeah.
But for the most part, if I get spoiled, it does not ruin it for me. It doesn't matter whether
it's not going to stop you from reading a book. If somebody told you the crazy ending. Okay. Yeah. That's interesting. All right.
Yeah. Well, there's
stuff like, you know, like Dune, the movie Dune. Mm-hmm. Like, guess what? It rains at the end. That's exactly what happens. And it spoils absolutely nothing.
Dune, Emmett. Oh man. Yes. Now I can't watch Dune.
That's okay. Come to Arizona. I'll let you ride the Sandworm.
Yeah. The rain must flow or something.
Right.
Daryl, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to bring up that. What? I don't remember the name of that movie. What's the one with the black guy at the end that has a wiener? You don't want to know that.
Guy at the end that has a wiener? Hold on a minute.
The Crying Game?
He's not really a black guy, but okay. Sure.
Yeah, you don't want that spoiled.
That's my superpower. I can take a phrase and just tell you the title of the movie.
And now I want Daryl Skeels to just write a book describing movies in that way.
Yeah.
Yes. That you just have to guess what movie he's describing.
Black guy at the chapter 3. Black guy at the end with his wiener. That's pretty good. Yeah.
Guy from Moonlighting sees ghosts.
Yeah. Well done, everyone. Well, that was awesome. Before we talk to our guests about some of the stuff they're up to, because we like to do this at this portion of the show, big thanks to everybody who submits stuff to our subreddit, right, Tom?
Oh, yeah. We got some great submissions today. Mike Zhu, Koji-san 1225, Buckeye Fitzy, and of course, the venerable Captain Kipper. All contributed stories we used today.
Always good people. Real quick.
Currentgeek.reddit.com, folks. Get in there and vote.
That's right. We like to use this part of the show to chat with our guests real quick about what they're up to and what they do. Daryl, let's start with you. Tell us more about, This Week in Trek or your Trek nerd stuff that you do on the show with me on TMS or the Grumpy Cast. Just tell people what you do.
Oh, well, what do? I go to work at 6:30 in the morning, and an hour and a half later, somebody calls me and asks me dumb Trek. Well, it used to be Trek questions. Now it's just general trivia, and I usually get it wrong.
Yeah, sometimes Trek. It depends.
Yeah, sometimes.
Sometimes we're in the mood. But you've been doing this.
I didn't know this was a service. I didn't know I could just like call Daryl and ask him questions.
Well, I'll get you his number. So Daryl,
that's Daryl's job. He's in cloud computing. He does Daryl as a service. DaaS.
Yeah. There you go. Denial of Daryl service is what we're going to give him. So Daryl, are you? Tell us about the Star Trek show you do. That thing's been on the air forever now.
Yeah, This Week in Trek. I think we just passed 5 years recently doing that with Michael Gaines.
That's crazy. 5 years, really?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Holy crap!
We're coming up on 250.
That's awesome. ThisWeekInTrek.com is where people should go. And he does another show called The Grumpy Cast with an ex-pro wrestler where you guys are grumpy the whole time.
Daryl, what do you do for a living, though? Can you say?
No.
He's told me off the air, but it is actually kind of high top secret.
It makes
secret.
Me more intrigued.
I know. It's super intriguing. It actually is. Emmett, tell people what you're up to these days. I love your resume kills me. I want to be there when chocolate is being eaten by Leonard Nimoy, but what else are you up to?
What Daryl does is he waits until the end of the movie and gets his out. That is his full-time job.
What? No wonder he can't talk about it.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah, no wonder he never talks about it. Interesting.
I'm a writer, producer, composer. Write a lot of music for video games. I'm currently working on Secret Project, which will be, I suspect, finally revealed to the world in the next week or so. That has been probably the most ambitious project I've ever worked on.
Wow. And any hints at all as to publisher or developer or any of that?
Oh man, I could give that away. And I'm under a pretty strong NDA.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But it won't be long.
The gaming NDAs are notoriously hardcore. They're hard to get out of. So I get it.
Yeah. Well, it's like the one for CBS for Star Trek stuff is like a phone book. It's like if you talk in your sleep and you tell anybody that's Fox a half Vulcan, you go to jail. No, it's just one of those things where you just can't talk about it. But the good news is everybody associated with Secret Project has a code name that I use on Twitter. And Secret Project is codenamed as Secret Project on Twitter. So I have been posting updates to this thing that nobody knows about, but they will very soon.
I'm really excited about that. Should they just follow you on Twitter or someplace to kind of get the big reveal, or where's the place to find out when it all goes live and gets revealed?
Absolutely everybody should follow me on Twitter because I am charming as f***.
I can tell. Right now I can tell. Wait, what's the Twitter account?
It's at Emmett Plant. EmmettPlant.
I was hoping it was like CAF, like short for your previous statement. Yeah, that's the one. Well, good. Well, more on all that stuff later. Do follow those guys and you'll learn it. Hey, current geekers, a quick minute to talk about our new sponsor, Host Papa at hostpapa.com. You're a small business owner. I know you are. Many of you are. Not all of you, but many of you. And those who aren't, well, you're a creative guy trying to do something cool on the web, or you're an entrepreneur of some sort and you want to do something on your own. One way or the other, all of you need great, reliable web hosting. You know that you do. They have complete turnkey solutions, making it easy for small business owners, digital entrepreneurs, and freelancers to get websites up and running in no time. They have literally everything your business needs, including lightning-fast servers, professional email, automated website backups, cutting-edge security, and hundreds of cloud-based productivity tools. Even if all you're trying to do is make like a Star Wars fan site, they are there for you. But if you're bigger than that, you're trying to sell stuff, you make salsa, let's say. I don't know why I picked that, but hey, that's what I'm going with. You can make a small business site in no time at all. They have the best web hosting for small businesses and affordable pricing and award-winning support available 24/7, 365. If you need extra help, they'll give you a little one-on-one for nothing, for free. They'll even help you move your old website. $3.95 a month is where these things start, and they'll even give you a free domain. There's no risk. They offer an unconditional 30-day money-back guarantee, so you can just try them out without any risk to you. All right, here's what you're going to want to do. If you're a small business owner, go to hostpapa.com/currentgeek and check out what our friends at HostPapa offer. Because you're fans of the podcast, if you use the code currentgeek at checkout, you'll get 15% off your shared hosting account. Enter the code currentgeek at checkout for 15% off. Hostpapa.com. Check it out today. Settle in.
America scores and wins.
All right. It's a little trivia time. We call it the pop quiz. In this quiz, we ask each of you a series of questions and areas of expertise. It turns out this is the first week you've done this, but you both have the same category of questions. If you get something right, you'll hear this. If you get it wrong, you'll hear this. And Daryl, we're going to start with you. Are you ready, sir, for your questions?
Let me get my own buzzer ready and my own little ding-dong thing so right. I can make myself right.
All right. That sounds fine.
Emmett did say that was your job.
Yeah, so. You're having your ding-dong. here's your topic, and you both have the same topic, but we're going to start with Daryl. It is the topic of Star Trek, the original series. All right, so we're really going for the stuff you know, the things you love. And here is your first question. And Tom's going to keep score the whole time, so here you go. First question. In the episode, Let That Be Your Last Battlefield, what planet is the Enterprise trying to reach in order to decontaminate it?
Oh, I forgot. This isn't multiple choice.
You're damn straight it's not.
They're going to decontaminate the black and white planet.
Is that your final answer?
Man, I could pick it out if I had multiple choice, but
The answer.
Okay, I'll have to say something. I don't know.
Shout out Starbucks.
You got one?
Starbucks.
No. Daryl's incorrect. He took too long. The answer is Arianus. Arianus or Arianus.
Arianus. Yeah, that's right.
All right.
Well, he gets a half point for saying the black and white planet.
Was it black and white? I don't know. All right.
When I watched it on my old 19-inch black and white television, was.
That's true. Everything was back then. Ah, the heady days of 1978. All right. What drug does Dr. McCoy accidentally inject himself with in the episode "The City on the Edge of Forever"? Points for Daryl.
Damn it!
That's my question.
Your question. It's still your question. All of these I give you are yours.
Okay.
Emmett just got real excited.
It is cortrazine. It'll make you do hand flips.
Yeah, that is correct. Tom, I don't know how you want to score
that. How many CCs?
Ooh, bonus points. If Daryl doesn't know how many CCs, then maybe the ding against Emmett won't be as severe if he knows it.
I'm going to guess. Oh, it wasn't much. Not 20. 20 would be a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot of CCs.
I have no idea, by the way.
I'll just say 20.
Yeah, sure. 20. Yeah, sounds good to me. Get a point.
All right, well done. Next question, Daryl. In the episode The Way to Eden, what is the name of the space hippie that wants Spock to join them for a jam session? Oh, that's a bad episode.
That is bad. I avoid watching it, so I avoid remembering things from it.
Yeah.
Hey, man.
I'll give you a hint. I'll let you... No, I'm not going to hit this. Let's just say it's the episode The Way to Eden. No hints.
Yeah, I know that.
Yeah.
Or you could sing us the song.
The Way to Eden.
It's not the song.
I don't know. I think I'm giving it a point for that, though.
Yeah. That was pretty good.
Boy, it's easy to get points here.
It is.
It's not that hard, really.
It's easy to lose them, too. Just as easily. Yeah, you lose them just as quick.
The guy's name that did what? Had ears?
Yeah, no.
The guy with the ears?
No, he's the hippie. I don't know if he had ears.
The guy who did the singing.
Didn't they all have ears?
Yeah, that's him. Isn't it? Oh, no. Isn't this the guy that played somebody?
You're going to get a delay of game deficit here if you're not
going to. He's nine or something.
I don't think you're going to. I think he doesn't know.
Okay. Nah, I don't know.
All right, there you go. It's Adam, and that's why I was trying to give you a hint.
Oh, crap. Why? How do I not know that?
No, I feel the same way.
We're thinking about the ringleader.
You're right, I was.
Yeah. And the way to Eden, I just thought that was a hint, but it's fine. You didn't get it. All right, next question. What mineral is the Enterprise Enterprise tasked with getting in the episode The Cloud Minders?
Oh, shit. Another stupid-ass episode. it's from the troglodytes that dig in the ground. I think I've only seen this episode twice in my life because it's so dumb.
Yeah.
The stuff to get that they mine for it. Shoot. If there's a multiple choice, I'd get it too.
Yeah.
Dirt.
Dirt. Incorrect. It is a Zenite. Zenite is the proper answer.
Zenite, yeah.
Yeah. Dirt. Ah, the old mineral dirt. Can't get enough of that. All right, final question. In the Man Trap, what animal does Professor Crater compare the M113 salt vampire to in regards to its diminishing population? What animal?
An Eevee.
A Psyduck.
It's hard to do this without multiple choice.
Yeah. Well, look, you can't go on life through life just Farman. Skimming along. You
gotta... It wasn't a dodo bird.
No.
I haven't seen this in a long time.
Squirtle.
Squirtle. Jigglypuff.
Damn it. I should know this. I'm going to kick myself.
I'd like to see that. The kicking yourself, I mean.
Oh, I can.
Just so this, if you don't know, then I think a random animal is going to give you as good a choice as any. I'll give you a hint. It's on all fours. I'll give you that.
It's not a cat.
That led you
every
to believe
animal's
it was a cat.
Got all four.
Right, but why did you jump the cat? Why did you? Well, a meerkat could stand, right? Or a
still got four legs.
Sure, but
you have to answer at some point.
Yeah, like an ostrich. Those things are two-legged. They're examples. Birds in general.
It's an extinct something.
It has hair there.
So it's a mammal. A tusked emu of Mimir 7.
You are incorrect. It is the earth buffalo / bison is
the
correct answer.
Yeah.
Now it all rings a bell to you. All right, those are your questions.
Would have also accepted Tatanka.
All right, we're not going to give you your final score yet because we still got to ask Emmett his questions. Emmett, these are yours. Again, in the same category of Star Trek, the original series. Here is your first question. After Captain Kirk is attacked by the Mugato, what is used to treat his wounds?
Oh my God.
I know it.
You can't say it yet then.
He could use Daryl as a service though.
He can?
I don't know.
I'll just use Daryl as my lifeline.
If he's a client. I don't know if he signed up for DAAS service though.
I mean, I would have signed up for DAS. I mean, it's like that monthly recurring revenue that all these companies want now.
Yeah,
right.
But at the end of the month, Daryl takes.
Yeah, every time. Well,
yep.
As many times as you ask him.
I would say, you know, probably one of the crazy scalpels, but I don't know.
All right,
laser scalpel.
The correct answer is the
Mako root.
That is correct. Well done, Daryl.
Nice.
Daryl did know that one. Well, if we'd have just had that in your list, Daryl.
All right, so Daryl gets a point for answering, but then loses a point for tauntingly answering.
All right, fair enough. Next question. In the episode Friday's Child, the Enterprise tries to get mining rights for what mineral?
Friday's Child?
Yeah.
Isn't it dilithium?
Nope. It's topoline. Topoline.
That doesn't even exist. That's
well,
not even real.
It's sort of made up, I'm guessing. But TOPALINE. 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 However you say it.
Top of the line, topaline.
That's
only
right.
Available from Friday's Child.
That's right. Top of the line. Here's your next question.
Now available with cubic zirconia.
There you go. Next question. What ship transported Charles Evans to the Enterprise in the episode Charlie X?
Oh, my God. These are insane.
Know that one.
You do know that one? This is hilarious.
Oh,
you
God.
Were given it's like your quizzes were mixed up or something.
I don't think it was like a Federation ship. I think it was like something called the Condor or something.
It's let me see if it was the Condor. Nope, it was the Antares is the correct answer.
Were they a Federation ship?
Was
yeah.
it? It was.
They showed the guys from the Antares bring Charlie Evans over.
Yeah, but did they show the ship though?
I don't think so.
Mm. Yeah, I don't think of it as a Starfleet vessel for some reason.
Is Charlie X is the one with the eyes that are all weird because he has power or something? I don't remember.
Yeah,
that
one. Rolls yeah. back in his head.
Okay, that's what I was thinking.
Emmett gets a point for correctly identifying that these questions are insane.
Yeah, and well done. Next
There's
question.
A million things in this galaxy you can have and a million that you can't.
Yep. This is one of them. In The Dagger of the Mind, what mental asylum is the Enterprise headed to deliver medical supplies? So what mental asylum?
An asylum of the mind.
Yeah, what would you call... Why would you... Yeah, well, whatever. There's a different word for this.
Federation Starbase Arkham.
You are so not close. It is the
Arkham Asylum.
It is nicely done. The Tantalus Colony.
Oh yeah.
Although if I were giving points, that was pretty clever. But I'm
no,
not.
No, no, have that. Just stay out of my arena. Question answer. Oscar, stick to your side.
All right, all right.
He definitely gets a half point for the Arkham.
All right, it was pretty.
You know, the worst part is I know a guy that would nail every one of these questions.
Oh, that is bad. You getting drinks with him? I'm sure is a real treat. Final question.
He's actually. They use him for, like, the guys that write Star Trek novels.
Yeah.
They basically reach out to him. They're like, hey, I need a Federation starship that's like a, you know, like a heavy cruiser that is set up like this. And he goes into the blueprints. He's like, okay, well, there's this class, there's this class, there's this class.
Wow.
And he'll answer all of these ridiculous questions. He has rooms in his house devoted to nothing but this kind of information.
Wow, that's crazy.
That was me about 30 years ago.
Yeah. That was you. Well, what are you now?
I don't
in a healthy relationship.
I'm old now.
In a healthy relationship, indeed. All right, final question. What disease does Commissioner Nancy Hedford get in the episode Metamorphosis? I actually know this one. Yeah, she gets a disease. I actually know this one.
Zika.
Before I saw it. It's not Zika.
Zika.
Definitely not Zika.
I have no idea.
The correct answer is Sakura's disease. Daryl, you knew that one, right?
If it was multiple choice, I would have known.
Oh, but not that.
Emmett still gets a point because you can't taunt him that you know it when you're asking the question.
That's true. I've done a terrible disservice really to the integrity of the quiz. So
I'm like Dean Wormer over here. Zero.
So how'd they do, Tom?
Well, out of a possible total of five. Emmett gets 2.5, Daryl gets 3.5. So very close score.
Man,
good job.
That was really close. Yeah. Wait, not bad. Nice low scores, guys. Well done. There's your quiz, everybody. Thank you for joining us for that. We do have one final thing. It's an email from a listener. We get emails here on the show. They come to us at currentgeek@gmail.com. You can also leave us voicemails at 801-471-0462. This comes from Jimmy because he says this. Hi, geeks. It's your boy, Jimmy. I want to say thanks for all your shows and also ask you this. What other Star Wars story would you like them to hit in these standalone movies? Thanks. So we got a lot more info about the Han Solo thing. We got Rogue One coming out this year. Beyond that, outside of the numbered sequels, what would be a good thing for them to tackle? And it can be from extended fiction that's no longer considered canon, or it can be... You know, whatever. Is it a Thrawn story? Is it something else? Would you like to see the beginnings of the Ewok people? Like, what do you want? Emmett, what do you think? What part of Star Wars has not been fully fleshed out in film?
I would absolutely love to see Mara Jade on screen.
Mm-hmm.
I'd absolutely Second love that. To see Talon Card. There's also, I don't even know how they would do it, but there's a really, really funny book called Tales from Jabba's Palace.
Oh, yeah.
And there is a race in that book that makes all of their decisions based on the great god Quay, which is essentially a magic eight ball. Like everything they decide to do is done by consulting a magic eight ball.
Was this intentional comedy style stuff?
The one story in there about this is definitely yes.
Oh, wow.
But I would love to see like, Tales from Jabba's Palace done as like mini-sodes. Mm. Like I'd like to see like, hey, here's a 45-minute episode of A Tale from Jabba's Palace. I think that'd be pretty fun.
All right, Daryl, what do you think? What do you want to see?
Oh, how about Yoda the early years?
Oh, well, haven't we seen that,
where
though?
Where he's a rebellious teenager.
Yeah, but that's like 600 years previous to prequels, right? Like,
it's a Yoda Maz Kanata buddy film.
Oh, dude.
Not my dad, you are!
Hate you, I do. So I would
ask to be born. I didn't.
There you go. I would probably like to see something. I would like to see something wholly original. I don't need them to be referential. You know, I know. Episode 7 is in a lot of ways a retelling of Episode 4, and that's sometimes good to do in these movies. You bring people back in for what they originally love. But I wouldn't mind seeing something set in the Old Republic universe or some other side story with a cast of characters that are just interesting in their own right, and they don't have to necessarily adhere to the current Star Wars archetypes, like the Han Solo guy and the young, naive Luke. And I don't need that again, per se. So, I you know, like something out of the ordinary. I don't think they're going to do that, though, because this is all of the stuff they've announced so far is all tied to nostalgia about the original films in some way. Han Solo, obviously.
Which will be the case until Episode 9.
Right.
Then if they decide to be like, that's it, Episode 9, that's the end of the main line, then they might start venturing off. I don't know.
They may. And I hope they do. I just want to see some original stuff. Not that this is not me complaining about the direction right now. I love where they're at. I just, that's what I want to see is them go to new places. And the side movies, like these Star Wars stories, as opposed to the mainline movies, where they're not going to do a crawl, which we've got confirmed this week and all that, that gives them an opportunity to stretch and to do, I don't know, things they wouldn't normally try. And they can be a little more experimental, and different styles can apply, and different directors can bring things that don't just have to be the template every time. So I guess until we see Rogue One, we don't know if that's going well yet or not, or if it's just going to feel like another Star Wars movie, or maybe I'm wrong and they should just all feel like Star Wars movies.
That's one of the problems they have with Star Trek too. Like, mm-hmm. If you're going to get a Star Trek movie, you're going to see him hit on the big things. Somebody is going to get beamed somewhere. You're going to see a tribble. You're going to see someone get neck pinched. Yeah. And it's like, okay, we get it, but let's move forward a little bit.
Yeah, just a little.
Know, and just don't, you know, I don't care about, you know, young Boba Fett and his urge to take down everybody else's lemonade stand. Like, that doesn't excite me, but it's a great big universe.
Unless it's like, actual lemonade stands, then I'm in, dude. That'd be amazing. Intergalactic lemonade stand destruction with...
Well, and we already got young Boba Fett in Clone Wars, right? We don't need to retread that ground.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but that's really young Boba Fett. That's like very young Boba Fett.
Yeah.
He's not hunting any bounties.
How about, he's definitely after lemonade stand.
Yeah. How about fetal Boba Fett? Can we go back that far? No?
Boba Fetal?
Yeah. It's actually not
just
a bad
9
name.
Hours of
of strange muffled sound coming from the outside. So, Tom, you're the only one that hasn't put in here. What do you want to see?
I'm with you, actually. I would like to see them go back Old Republic. In fact, maybe even prior. I don't really know where this lands, but I would like to see an origin of the Sith, origin of the Jedi movie.
Yeah.
And it gives you all the things you were talking about. Just takes us out of the entire constraints of having to plug into all these characters we've come to know. But I would care about it because I've come to know the Jedi and the Sith very well, and I would like to know more about how that came around.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I just think they have an opportunity there, and I know it's an expensive opportunity, and they got to be careful, and you know, you got to make sure you're giving people what they want, and what they want may not be what I want, but I'm excited.
Way better
either
than Twi'lek's Gone Wild.
Yeah. Oh well.
Wait, you don't want that?
I was going to be trolly and say, I'd really like a good story about how Anakin Skywalker was originated.
Oh,
gross.
Hey, well, no, hold on now.
You're gross.
Can they jettison the prequels as canon also? Is that possible?
I mean, they can do whatever they want. They own them now. Yeah. I don't think they would. My personal theory is that those episodes, because there's a lot of really good things in them, are made for TV movie versions of the real events.
Mm. Okay. Well, time will tell, everybody.
They're like old cops episodes.
Yeah.
Oh, they're so therapeutic, though.
Well, they're like, what's that movie, The Lion in Winter, right? Mm. Great movie. Mm-hmm. Not actually historically accurate about that time in English history.
Yeah.
Sure. But it's fun. And so to me, it's like, Anakin really wasn't a virgin birth from midichlorians. That's just a thing they used in the movie.
Because
It was a made-for-TV movie and they were going for ratings.
Good point. By the way, there's also... So if they ever did want to venture back into the Clone Wars era and do something really cool and base it on something that was very successful and highly regarded for its story, the video game Star Wars Command or Republic Commando is called. Is
an
amazing game. One of the best games in that universe and really one of the great tactical sort of squad-based shooters ever. Would be a great place for this. Following a squad of clone troopers around is super good, super interesting. I don't think they'll ever do it, but they might. I think you have a better chance of Old Republic being a setting, given the love people have for the Knights of the Old Republic games.
I think based on a video game, I think you're probably more likely to see, you know, the Caravan of Courage to be remade.
Yeah, probably true. But man, a guy can have wishes. We'll see. Anyway, there you go. Thanks, Jimmy. Big thanks to Jimmy and anyone who sends us feedback. We love your emails. Again, that address is currentgeek@gmail.com. It's going to do it for the show. Huge thanks to our guests. Daryl, remind people once again where they can find you online, sir.
You can find me at the Trek Nerd on Twitter, and you can find me on the morning stream This Week in Trek and Grumpy Cast.
Good. Those are all fine shows. Found wherever podcasts are found.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Good to have you on. And Emmett, where can people find you, sir?
Twitter is usually the best. It's at Emmett Plant, and you should follow me there because I say funny things.
I'm going to follow you there. There's going to be stories about wieners. Or no, that was Daryl who said the wiener thing.
Yeah, I'm a white hot grease fire of entertainment. So
I follow him. He's good.
All right. I love your. That's put that on the box art, Daryl. I follow him. He's good. I think that's some high praise.
I'm gonna use Daryl as a service to do all my blurbs from now on.
I know he's gonna really tap into that aloof market that's just out there waiting to hear from you. Tom Merritt, anything from you, sir, before we go?
Check out TomMerrittBooks.com. We've got pre-orders for Pilot X, which is coming out in March. And, of course, you can get the Brief Guide to Cord Cutting, help you take back control of your television right now.
Very nice. Quick note from me, I am hosting something for Turner Broadcasting for the Bleacher Report with two other guys, Brian Huff and Seven. Yeah, that's right. His name is Seven. It's pretty awesome. Anyway, we're going to start a new podcast in August all about esports. They're getting into that very heavily over at BleacherReport.com. And if you don't know who that is, you probably don't watch sports much, because if you did, you'd love Bleacher Report. And they do amazing stuff with real sports, as the kids would say. But esports, as a new hot thing for them, is a big deal. And we're going to be a part of the show. It's called Rally Point, and there'll be details coming soon. You can find it on iTunes already for a pre-subscription, all free, of course. And if you just keep your eye on BleacherReport.com/esports, you'll see it pop there very, very soon. Very excited about that. And people should check that out if you like esports at all. It's going to do it. CurrentGeek.com.
Can I say one thing?
Yeah, go ahead. Sure, go ahead.
When it comes to Bleacher Report,
yeah,
I am very, very happy with their hockey coverage.
Yeah, it's good, right?
Like, I'm a huge hockey fan, and ESPN, like, hockey's the redheaded stepchild, and they have no coverage at all.
Mm-hmm.
So if you talk to the guys at Bleacher Report, tell them I'm really happy with the hockey coverage.
No, that's awesome. Yeah, I will be talking to them, in fact. And they are – it's funny you should say that, because they are kind of known for their hockey stuff, which is – which agreeably is real good. So do check them out. Thank you guys so much for being here. That's going to do it for us, everybody. Thanks for being here. Current Geek on Twitter. You can find Tom at Ace Detect, me at Scott Johnson, the show at Current Geek. And, of course, our website, currentgeek.com. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and our guests. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we join the Pokemon Go craze of the past few weeks with a brief look at all the interesting legal questions that this popular application and its certain knockoff competitors will raise. The first legal concern of Pokemon Go has largely been dealt with by the developer, that being privacy settings, which were way more than necessary for running the software. Originally, access to your entire Google account had to be granted to play on some platforms, and that would raise serious potential liability concerns for the company maintaining and accessing that information. There's already videos and stories of players being transfixed in their phones and walking into roads or other dangerous situations. That raises a question of whether there could be any legal liability for putting digital Pokemon in places that lure people into dangerous areas. The game's terms of service disclaim all liability for such things, but would that stand up in court? That's an open question. Another issue is placement of Pokemon or gyms in locations of private property and businesses. A property owner could hypothetically argue that this creates an attractive nuisance by drawing unwanted people to the property, and it also negatively affects the owner's interest in exclusive possession of their property. Can real property rights be used to claim property rights in augmented reality, digital elements that are placed on the property by a third party? I expect someone will try such claims in court if annoyed enough. There's also the problem of potential competition for public spaces between Pokemon Go users, who may be congregating at a digital gym, and others who want to use the same public property for other purposes that it was designed for. It would be interesting to see if the government could constitutionally limit Pokemon Go and certain public properties. Some prison operators certainly think so, but that's maybe a slightly unique context. The bottom line is, the law always takes time to catch up with technology fads and movements, as discussed for the CFAA last week. But Pokemon Go raises far more interesting legal questions than you might originally think when you begin playing the game. Now excuse me while I go catch this Charmander, or maybe it's just Justin Robert Young. Who knows? Thanks for listening. If you will be at Gen Con in Indianapolis in August, come check out my seminars on IP law and game design, or message me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy, and we can meet up for a drink or a game.
Want to hear Scott Johnson rant about his kill-death ratio, his APM score, or his affair with Lord Jaraxxus? You're in luck, because Scott Johnson is joining forces with Bleacher Report to bring you a new podcast covering everything esports. Whether it's MOBA, FPS, CCG, RTS, or FGC. OMG! It all comes together at one place, Rally Point, forming up this August.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.